Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, Frankie Roberts of LINC, or Leading Into New Communities, a local nonprofit that teaches young African Americans to navigate middle-class white culture, and Walt Wolfram, a sociolinguist from NC State who's authored a number of books on dialects in the English language, including The Development of African American English. If you'd like to ask a question of our guests, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. We have an email from George in Wilmington, and he is asking, what is the difference between dialect and patois, for example, Jamaica?
Well, it's a matter of degree. I mean, something like the typically called the patois or Creole language is simply more mixed with elements of other languages and dialect. But a more interesting question, in a sense, takes up the issue of sort of the politicalization of language. And that is, what's the difference between a dialect and a language? And what we find out that it can't be defined structurally in terms of language, so that it turns out to be a political issue. And as someone has said, the difference is a language is a dialect with an army and a navy. and for that reason, for example, Swedish and Norwegian are quite mutually intelligible, but yet they're considered languages because they have a state boundary between them. Whereas there are a number of Chinese languages which are distinct and not mutually intelligible, but are called dialects because it unites a people. So it really becomes a more political issue. And while we're talking about African American English, on that basis, some of my colleagues, mostly African American colleagues, prefer the term African American language because it legitimizes it among languages. Dialects tend to be inferior to languages. So the issue between patois and dialect and language are all highly political issues. Not the answer that people wanted. They wanted a simple linguistic explanation. But there is no such thing.
Frankie Roberts, is there a resistance in the African American community to teaching AAVE or AAE or Ebonics to white people? Would there be a loss that happened there? Is there, because Walt Wolfram was just talking about how a language unifies a people. Is it okay to let people from other communities in, or did this develop for other reasons?
Oh, man, that's complicated. I think the politics of it is a challenge. I think within our community, you probably would have some disagreement, some agreement. However, I think as Brother Walt just brought out, because, I was having to be the student just now. So when you have that type of information, I think the more information you have, the more informed your response is. So if that kind of information was dispersed throughout both communities, it probably would kind of lower the bar of tension, for the lack of a better word. So without information like that, certainly your goal is to be equal. And then when language is used as a filter to be prejudiced or to discriminate, that's where the imbalance come with blacks. So if my language is equal, even if I taught African American language or dialect, then we would be fine as long as it's equal. But if teaching Ebonics, for the lack of a better word, would put me politically inferior, then I'm going to have an issue with blacks who would teach it. And so that's and one of the things I'd like to add is in our community, when we speak the King's English or standard English well, then whites typically say he's well spoken or he is so intelligent only because of how I speak the King's English or standard English. And to me, that's offensive because that's not something whites say to each other, that they're well-spoken or they're intelligent based on how well they speak. So those are things, again, that kind of creates these artificial barriers that separate us because, you know, you just said to me, black people don't typically speak well.
You know, Frankie Roberts, that is such an interesting point. And I've actually heard this before, and I've heard African-Americans say, you know, don't say I'm articulate. Yes. Come on. I mean, what do you expect? But yeah. I'm not convinced that white people don't say that to each other. Because I think that I've heard white people say that to each other, and I understand why it could be read as an offensive remark. But Walt Wolfram, as a white guy, is that something? Is that a remark that you would hear one white person say to another?
Typically, whites don't say that to each other unless there's some exceptional reason. So if a Southerner, which is considered less status than a Northerner would say that, they say, oh, you know, John Edwards speaks very articulately for a Southerner. And so there's actually a whole book on this by a couple of linguists about Barack Obama and the description of his speech, even by his vice president colleague. You know, for a black man, he speaks really articulate. And as Frankie just said, that assumes that we don't expect black people to talk that way. But I also want to bring up another issue that was raised, and that is whites sometimes in high school, because blacks are considered cool, will sometimes cross and speak like them. And we have a whole term for it, and it's been studied. It's called crossing. But what's interesting is that if you follow those kids as they grow up and out of high school, they don't talk like that anymore. Because the difference is that whites have an option. I don't have to talk that way anymore. And if I want a job out there, I'm going to have to talk white mainstream. And so they can do it during a period of adolescence when they're trying to be cool and hip, and then go back to being white.
So that sounds like a form of cultural appropriation.
Yes, it is.
Like,
yeah,
I'll
exactly.
take this piece, yes. uh-huh. and I can use it for a while, and then I can take
cool.
it off.
While I'm trying to be cool as a high school kid, but when I'm out there in the world and need a job, I don't need that anymore.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking about African-American vernacular English, frequently called Ebonics. What role does it play in our culture and in our schools? Here to answer your questions, Executive Director of LINC, a local nonprofit leading into new communities, that's Frankie Roberts, and a sociolinguist from NC State, Walt Wolfram. And Walt Wolfram, I was going to ask you about the origins, because you've written an entire book about this,
right.
The origins of African-American English. And you were saying earlier that this is a language that doesn't really have, you were comparing it to, say, Swedish and possibly French. These are associated with geographic places, but there's no geographic place associated with AAE. Can you talk about how this grew up?
Yeah, well, there was a contact situation. So actually, the language of West Africa, because of the trade and then the slave trade, so it followed the route toward and left an indelible imprint on it. So as people who spoke different African languages, whether it was Mandinga or Ewe or whatever it was, would learn English, be forced into camps where they spoke a specialized kind of English. And the imprint of that language contact situation has actually affected it. In a sense, it's no different from the fact that mountain people have the imprint of Scottish English on them. And so it happens to be that there's a link between the Caribbean, there's a link between West Africa, there's a link between Gullah in South Carolina, and then there's also a link to African America. The important point here is, like any other language situation, it comes from a background. The background is different, obviously, when you have slaves and you have owners. It's a very different one. But there is a very distinct and well-formed linguistic heritage that we can sort of follow in terms of the roots and the migration of African Americans in the United States.
And all language changes over time, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
There are rules, the grammatical rules that we would consider broken today that were perfectly acceptable
a few hundred years ago. Teenager speech. I mean, they'll kill their parents, you know, by adopting a language change where they use like to introduce a quote or a thought quote. So he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, what do you think I'm doing? And parents, oh, these kids use like all the time. It's driving me crazy. You know, hey, language change. If language change is going to drive you crazy, then get used to being crazy. Because it's happening all the time.
If you'd like to ask a question, we have about 7 minutes left in the show. Give us a call, 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. We're talking about African-American English and the role it plays in our culture and how it's viewed. Frankie Roberts, there is an entire sector of African-Americans, men, women, younger, older, who rail against the use of Ebonics or African American English, and they say it's something that is putting it's putting obstacles in your path for no good reason, just because you're attached to your culture, and we have to not speak that way. What do you say to those folks who consider this a perpetuation of some sort of cultural divide?
Well, it's correct. The studies show that if you speak Ebonics and to the degree where a person recognizes it, it's going to cause a 12% less earning income of blacks. That's what the studies show. So there is an outcome, and the outcome in a lot of cases will cause you not to be able to be employable. Sometimes it's going to affect where you live. It affects a lot of things. So I think that as we can push more, as much equality that's tied to English or language, then we try to kind of walk that fine line. So, yes, we would have an issue with that.
And you talk about code switching in terms of the men and the boys that you work with. You say, you know, this is one language, this is another, and
Correct.
We're going back and forth. And you don't criticize them for the use of that. But Fox News, for instance, recently did a story about an African-American teacher who is crusading against the use of that language at all. And there, you know, he talks about the difference between ask and axe, and really teaches the kids that there is something inferior about that language. How do you feel when you hear that? What would we lose? What would this culture lose? What would the African American culture lose if we lost African American English?
I think we would lose a lot, and heritage is the biggest thing we would lose. And at the end of the day, whether I say ask or ask, you know, at the end of the day, does that make me a bad person because speaking it the way I was taught? And I think we take in cases like that, we create those illusions or those artificial barriers because I'm looking for a reason to not like you, to not accept you, to not be equal to you. And so I think it's, again, just a artificial barrier. But I think culture is rich, heritage is rich, and with that becomes language.
You're listening to Coastline. And Gordon from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question. I was trained as a radio announcer and a narrator, just like Rachel, and we were taught to speak in, I'm talking back in the 60s and 70s, standard American English, which is supposedly the way things are written in the dictionary and pronunciations. But now after, you know, years and years of time going by and being a little bit older, I realize that that's presuming that people know how a certain sound is supposed to sound. And, of course, you know, if you pronounce a certain sound like an upside down E in the dictionary one way, it's going to sound differently to someone else. How does that relate to this?
It's a good question, Gordon. Walt Wolfram.
Well, the fact of the matter is it's impossible to speak English without speaking some dialect of English. Even broadcasters have to choose whether they say, for example, the vowel in caught. Either you choose to say it as caught, caught, caught. You know, however you say it, you have to make a dialect choice.
And you're talking about the past tense of catching a ball.
Right, yeah. Okay. Thank you. Because actually many dialects don't differentiate between the place, the thing that you lie on and the thing that you catch. But the reality is that in this whole scheme, certain kinds of variations are more acceptable than others. So axe, for example, is sort of this icon of stigma, despite the fact that in the history of the English language, the axe, ask, actually resulted from a transfer. The original verb was axion, which actually, so it was originally pronounced as axe, not ask, and it was the change in the English language that gave it the ask pronunciation. So there are all these sort of curiosities of history which show how arbitrary language is. It's not about language. It's who you are in your representing language. So if the change is middle class, it's acceptable. If it's not middle class, it's not acceptable.
And that is an excellent final thought. Thank you so much. That's this edition of Coastline. I'd like to thank our guests, Walt Wolfram of NC State, Frankie Roberts of Link. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who emailed in your comments. Join us for the next Coastline when we take a ride on the rivers of North Carolina with explorer and anthropologist Monroe Fisher. That's next Wednesday at 12:06 here on HQR News 91.3 FM. Coastline is produced by Isabel Shepherd. Our technical director is Ken Campbell, and Alexa Doran is our webmaster. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.